But it was the sequence of events at the candidate forum where Paul Masana was saying something I totally agree with and think should be non-controversial, that we need to reduce vehicle miles traveled, and that's about providing alternatives. And you followed it up with no social engineering. That's what really got me. Oh, it got me in the heart.
I guess so, because ever since then, you seem sad.
I have turned. Well, I'm not sad. I'm okay.
Well, but like,
I did turn it into a meme. I have said social engineering a ton since you said that, so it really did stick in my head.
Yeah. Well, I mean, did you hear the noise in the room when I said that?
People groaned in approval, which is a noise I didn't think existed in the world. A groan of approval.
This is a real thing.
None of you have the balls to stop this. Stop this.
I've got plenty of time. I have nothing else going on today.
We're in the Wedge neighborhood right now.
Here we are on the Wedge Live podcast at 50th and Bryant. I'm here with Kate Mortensen, Ward 13 candidate. I'm your host, John Edwards. We're going to take a bike ride on the new Bryant Avenue. We're going to talk about your race for city council, local politics. Good morning, Kate. It's a lovely day. Or good afternoon.
And there's the airplane overhead. It is a lovely day. And I have some, I don't know, pretty compelling bike stories I can share.
Okay.
Along the way, I've had some experiences on bikes over the years.
Let's go.
All right.
You've had some things to say about Bryant Avenue. I don't know if we can have a combative bike ride. I've never had a combative bike ride with anyone before.
Hey, listen.
Let's not do that.
Listen, mister. One left jab and you're horizontal.
What do you think about this? This little...
The on-ramps?
Yeah.
You know, I think it's great when you're on a bike. It's absolutely great. I think there's a little bit of confusion if you are in a car, because we're not used to, as car drivers, which I don't describe myself necessarily as, but if you're in a vehicle, we're not used to seeing so much space given to bicycles that it's a little bit confusing, but we're going to get used to it. Because this is, on the whole, an amazing project. And it's disappointing that it wasn't better managed. I think that's really been my point about it all along, John, is that if there were a, you know, elected leader, let's say a council member, who was really engaged, then some of the challenges that we see, I don't think we'd have them.
So you think it's an amazing project. Oh, we got construction here. Let's go in the street.
We can do that.
What's amazing about it, and then talk about like specifically what you saw as the problem with it.
Yeah, so for example, what's happening right here is they're widening the apron of a driveway to allow the homeowner to access their own garage. The original project left driveways so narrow that you actually couldn't make the kind of hard right or left turn that would allow you to get into your driveway. So I was chatting with somebody yesterday about that, and they're right across from an apartment building. And the guy felt terrible. He's like, geez, you know, they take away the parking across the street, I can get into my driveway, but I don't feel great about that. I feel badly for those neighbors. And if they retain their parking on the street, I can't get into my driveway. He's like, I feel like it's kind of needlessly polarizing. So, you know, that's an example of something where maybe it's because I'm a middle child.
Yeah.
I just want to see things come out well for everybody. So what's amazing about it, John, is A, it's beautiful. B, it's peaceful. C, it's like generous. Like it's a really exciting, generous project. There's a lot that's really compelling about it.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. I think people, because I talk about Bryant Ave as being a debacle, for example, people think that I'm not for more multimodal options, but that's not true. It's just an example of multiple failures of government, and it becomes kind of a metaphor of why I'm running.
So you've got some technical issues with it, but on the whole, you like that there's a bike path here?
I do.
Okay. Traffic is a little calmer?
Absolutely. I mean, we have a problem all over the city right now with drivers driving too fast and going right through stop signs and drag racing down streets. So driving more slowly overall, I think, is a social norm we need to adopt. Now, whether we engineer that into our roads, you know, I'm not sure how I feel about that.
What's the alternative? So there was a red flag at the candidate forum, the Ward 13 candidate forum, where your opponent, incumbent council member Linnea Palmisano, was giving a nod, which I thought was good, to reducing vehicle miles traveled in the city, like restating what is an adopted city goal. And that means providing options for people to travel in other ways, making it easier to travel those ways. And then your response to that immediately after was about social engineering, which is a phrase that, like, it makes me worried to hear. Huh. It's kind of a red flag, social engineering. As if my friend Alyssa Shuffman says, all infrastructure is social engineering. Huh. The street here is social engineering, an interstate is social engineering. Because we have these options, because they're convenient, we choose them.
Yeah.
And so do you want to elaborate on what you meant by Bryant Avenue being social engineering?
Well, I mean, they're called chicanes, some of these bump outs that artificially take road space where they previously didn't, and nor do they necessarily need to. So I guess that's what I'm referring to. And that translation for chicane is actually trick or trickery, actually. So that's real. And people who live along, and I think it's really important to say, like, for me, myself, it doesn't really impact me. For people who live here and the local businesses here, they have very strong feelings. They're not all con. Many of the strong feelings are for and pro this particular project and more like it. However, everybody along this way is going to have to pay about $5,000 at the median household value over a number of years for this project, whether or not they are excited about chicanes and some of the ways that the road has been engineered to eliminate traffic and also parking. So I just, you know, I have a heart for that too.
Right. So, and that cost would have been the same even if they had gotten the design that they wanted.
Do you think so?
I think so, yeah. I mean, the cost of concrete and asphalt and everything is the same whether that's for a bike lane or you're putting some green space in. I mean, it doesn't increase or decrease the cost either way to, like, lay it out in a different way. It's all the same cost.
I wonder though, because they will actually have to redo some of Bryant because of the, you know, the, I guess what I would call the flaws that could not be
right.
overlooked, which have to do with emergency vehicle access. And so in that, you know, there's going to be some additional expense, and maybe there's always that amount of extra for what might occur. But yeah, I would have thought with all of the processes that we went through, community input and other things, that this would be maybe like a little more expensive than just laying down a new layer of frosting on the road, you know?
We both agree that, like, people are driving too fast. It can be dangerous to bike and walk places in the city because, well, the way I explain it is the streets are dangerous. They are engineered to have people driving faster than is safe. Do you disagree with that? And if you do, what's the alternative? What do we do instead of the engineering piece to fix that problem?
I'm not suggesting that this is the right solution for Bryant Ave at this point, and I'm not suggesting this is what I would have said we should do with Bryant Ave had I been involved week to week. And when you're doing a giant public works project in your ward and you're the local representative, you really should be checking in with folks week to week and find out how it's going and be prepared to intervene if you see the likelihood or potential for, you know, some of the strong negative feelings around what at least the initial outcome has been. And I know over time things will settle. I do believe they will. But when it comes to driving too fast in other parts of Minneapolis, there's a real role for technology to play where you know, you can move around traffic camera and with encryption, they can track a vehicle license plate and hey, if it's one of my kids that's going 40 miles an hour in a 20 mile zone and a ticket drops into our mailbox, there will be some conversations for right. sure. So I think that there are a number of different things we can do to like re-up the social norms. I've seen the 20 is plenty speed limits. And those are good too. I just think we need to really double down on that and have people behave in an appropriate way, whether or not the roadbed has been altered.
You would support changing the state law to allow camera enforcement?
Yeah, I mean, I think that where we are with public safety and the number of sworn officers that we have, you know, are we really gonna be able to support you know, traffic policing in the future in the way we have in the past? Probably not, and I think there is a role for technology to play where we're able to continue to protect people's privacy as well.
I wonder if like Democrats and Republicans in the state legislature would go for that, because recruiting police is difficult nationally, and so I wonder if that makes it more likely to be adopted.
I think we're just, you know, even if you are a professional and disciplined and for all the right reasons, a law enforcement professional, there are things that cops used to do in the past that I just don't see them doing in the future, because the skill set is kind of niche and you want it for, you know, crime prevention, crime investigation, violent situations. But some of the challenges that we face are maybe not even like the best use of the skill or the time of a expensive police professional.
You know, Kate Mortensen, we've kept up this conversation through this whole, your whole campaign. We disagree on some big stuff, but we're taking a bike ride together.
Right? A lot of folks who are supporting me are to the right of me or to the left of me. They are supporting Kate Mortensen campaign because at the end of the day, leadership matters. And I think they see that I'm in it for the greater good and not a personal agenda on any particular one issue. That's what, you know, I'm hoping in continuing a dialogue, and when and I hope if I'm elected, like I'll come on and talk about anything, recognizing that sometimes it's gonna be really hot and we won't be on a beautiful fall bike ride.
Hey, is this Soren?
Hey,
Soren Stevenson!
Oh my gosh!
Did you want to be a guest on the Wedge Life podcast?
Right now.
Okay, does that mean you can't talk to us?
Yeah, sure.
Do you know Kate Mortensen?
We met at Open Streets.
Hey, nice to see you again.
Well, I don't have any questions prepared, Soren, but how is your campaign going?
It's going really well. People are really receptive and knocking a lot of doors, have a lot of volunteers. Things are going great.
I love the sweatshirt.
Thanks, I got it just the other day. It's brand new.
How do you feel about Bryant Avenue? Do you use it? Do you walk it? Do you bike it?
I was actually just walking it now to see. I mean, it's not my first time walking on it, but yeah, this is probably only the second or third time I've even been on it. But yeah, I'm excited. I haven't biked on it yet. I'm excited to try. I was just watching that person unload there and wondering, is that a benefit of the raised bike lane, or is that a downside of it? I wasn't quite sure, but...
More space. When there's lots of space, people can maneuver around. Pedestrians and bikes and people unloading can intermingle when they have enough space.
I listened to the podcast yesterday. I listen on Spotify, despite the fact that there's so many visual things. Yeah, and you guys were talking about the difference between like curb separated or raised up to curb level, and I don't know myself which one I prefer. Sorry, I'm just blathering at you all.
Oh, it just kind of came right at you.
You're the unanticipated guest. Do you want to be on the bike ride version of the Wedge Life podcast?
I'd love to.
Okay, let's set that up.
Okay, cool.
Look what I've made happen.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. This is one of my special skills.
Yeah,
Soren, can all sides of the political divide in Minneapolis get together and take bike rides, do you think?
I hope so. That sounds like fun to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll be in touch.
Cool. All right, well, have a great ride.
Take
Good
care.
To see you.
Bye, Soren.
Bye.
See you at the office.
Did you recognize him coming
of
up?
Of course, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yep, I saw him at the last Open Streets. And by the way, I think it's really sad and unfortunate that, the city partnered with the Minneapolis Bike Coalition. Is that the group that founded Open Streets?
originally, and they changed their name to Our Streets Minneapolis.
Okay. So, you know, the fact that they founded and basically branded, because I don't know that it would have been as cool if the city of Minneapolis, you know, did it on its own. This experience for so many years that people have had that is just, you know, better and better every year, and then didn't renew their contract, but said, oh, but we're going to keep doing it. We're just going to basically take the brand and call it something else. That seemed wrong to me. Yeah. And I talked to somebody with Our Streets and expressed that to them, that that just didn't seem like a right way of handling that. So
Mike Norton, my good friend Mike Norton, business magnate, shipping container magnate Mike Norton, endorsed you. His big thing was a difference on public safety. Am I characterizing his endorsement correctly?
I believe I have Mike's endorsement because when I decided to run, the first thing I did is talk to the folks who had previously challenged the incumbent to find out, you know, what that experience was like and to let them know how I was thinking about it. And, you know, early on, Mike was like, wow, I really don't agree with you, but I feel like I know where you're coming from. So, you know, we've gotten to know each other and we're pals, which is great. So issue-wise, something, you know, Mike realizes, crime, top of mind for everybody. And also, frankly, you know, for older residents and houses further apart, like in Ward 13, people want to know they can access businesses and amenities by a personal vehicle if that's the way that they are able to. So that's something that early on Mike was like, hey, totally don't agree, but you talk about that enough and you just might win.
he's such a Machiavellian character, that Mike Norton.
Well, he's busy, you know. His business is like blowing up.
And, is it? The shipping container business is blowing up?
For sure. What everybody needs is a good shipping container.
So is it difficult to drive in Minneapolis? Because whenever I get into a car, which is when people offer me rides, it's not often, but when people do, I'm amazed at how easy it is to get around the city and find places to park. It's like, wow, I went a really long distance in just 10 minutes. And I feel like there's an experiential difference, perception difference in how easy various modes of travel are. I feel like it's very easy to drive. Am I wrong?
Well, I mean, I think the solution is to have these options. You know, I do. I think the options are really important. And by adding in, do we need to take away? I don't think we should think of it as a zero-sum game, because that is very polarizing. Generally, I'm running late. It's a kind of character flaw. I always think I could do more with 5 minutes than I actually can. So oftentimes I am jumping in to my vehicle when I should be, you know, walking or biking, but I can work on that. As far as parking goes, you know, for example, it's a 52% renter city, John. And last year when Minneapolis failed in the winter to clear the snow, and we had 9 weeks of emergency one-sided parking, so 50% of the parking was taken away. And we're not in that future state of transit yet. We just are not. And so people had to, in rental parts of the city, just go twice as far to find a place for their vehicle and then struggle over giant frozen snowbanks with, you know, pets or groceries or kids, I don't know. But, you know, we have to think about what the needs are of those who really rely on the city's to function well.
I've heard from some people to the left of you that the reason to support you is public safety. It is you are more likely to hold the mayor's administration accountable on things like public safety, but not just public safety. What is the case for Kate Mortensen in that regard? Like, why would you be different than Linnea Palmisano on those things?
Yeah, so this is actually a very closely watched race. It's a close race and it's a closely watched race. And I believe what people are closely watching is, can one essentially moderate on city council and city council terms in a Democrat city, upend another, replace another? That's like this, what do they call it? Internecine battle, like we're supposed to be on the same team. But apart from both being generally moderate, policy-wise, we are about as similar as any two humans, which is to say, not similar, very distinct, very different. There are stylistic differences. I'm an extrovert. I love people. I enjoy being around people with different points of view. I think you get to a better solution by knowing and understanding that there are different ways of having knowledge and experience, not just one way. So I'm going to be able to work across differences more effectively. I mean, I don't have a magic wand, but I'm going to be more effective at working across differences. I introduced myself to Soren the other day. We don't agree on everything, but my guess is there are quite a few things that we can get together on.
I like that she's an introvert, though. I'm an introvert. I kind of like that she's not flashy. So she does that routine where she's like, I'm an introvert and I don't like being on stage. I'm a behind the scenes person. Those are her most endearing moments to me. So shame on you for being an extrovert, Kate Morrison.
I can't help it. I love people. So here's the thing, you know, we have two different skill sets here. Okay. So I'm not going to win, and nor is it appropriate to really, you know, attack the incumbent. But the incumbent has a skill set for management and managing processes, and as you say, head down, working very hard. And after 10 years, the results should speak for themselves. And I don't see the results that we need. Even in the last couple years, we just have not been able to, with the skill set that we have from Ward 13, really move the dial very much. And so a different skill set, maybe more robustly engaged, maybe more willing to, you know, offer ideas and solutions, even if they aren't ultimately the ones that are picked, is going to be what it takes. I believe that's what it's going to need to make us get us off the back foot.
We're almost going into the wedge.
Wow, look at us.
Should we go into the wedge? Here we are, Wedge Neighborhood.
Everyone should get on a bike at least once a week.
Sorry for taking you out of Ward 13.
I love it. You know, one of the things, I moved 17 years ago to Ward 13, Lyndhurst. I mean, I don't think of it as Ward 13. I think of it as Lyndhurst neighborhood. And absolutely beautiful and lovely in every way, and lacking in diversity. And having lived, you know, in different parts of the world, being really fortunate to have also traveled. I served in the Peace Corps. I've lived on the East and West Coast. Like, I just feel fortunate that I've been in places where there's just a ton of diversity. So I moved into Lyndhurst, but really kind of went out into the city to find my people.
I wonder if a council member representing Ward 13 can have a positive agenda.
What? John, what are you suggesting?
You talked about 10 years of Linnea Palmisano.
Yeah.
And that always touches my heart when you say that, because it's so true. Like, I don't know what she's been about, or what she's been trying to do, what
right.
she's been trying to accomplish.
Oh.
I don't know what the positive agenda is, but also I don't know, you rely on votes in Ward 13 to get elected. That's your constituency. I don't even know what the positive agenda of Ward 13 is. So make the case
okay.
that Ward 13 actually has a positive agenda for the city. And what is it?
Yep, absolutely. And you know what, if you're gonna be a leader, and you think you're leading, but nobody's following you, well, you're just taking a walk or a bike ride, maybe, I don't know. But leaders have a vision, okay? And so I have a vision for a Minneapolis and a Ward 13 that is both safe and also sound. And I have that based on hundreds, dare I say, almost 1,000 conversations that I've had on the doors, and my team, 12,000 door knocks and thousands of conversations. What's important to y'all in Ward 13? Like, what do I have to represent? Am I going to be able to do that? And what I've learned is, wow, that is a great pumpkin display.
Oh.
What I've learned is the things that people in Ward 13 want are the things that everybody not only wants, but needs. Okay, so definitely number one being safety. And I'll tell you, people don't want safety in Ward 13 on the backs of people in other parts of the city. They want safety from harassment and crime in Minneapolis. So that's number one. Number two is, people feel like, wow, you know, we pay the taxes and they go up reliably, but the services are reliably getting worse every year. And that has to do with the quality of the road infrastructure that we all share, and also the ability to manage snow. And we need to think about that in a new way, in a climate resilient way, that everybody in the city, whether they're on roller skates or on a bike or on a bus or in a car, is going to be able to move around the city with heavier snows, with different freeze and thaw cycles, and the roads, you know, working for all of us. So that's part of, my vision. Good stewardship of projects like Bryant Avenue had the potential to be universally delightful. And because there was a lack of leadership on the ground from the local council member, it didn't land that way. And that's really unfortunate because it's polarizing. So what I can provide as part of that vision is to help these different, help the present and the future sort of get along better, as it were, so that projects and next moves for our city are less polarizing. So those are three things, working together across difference and being focused on results and accountability on core services that affect everybody. I think that's valuable.
Tell me why you're not going to end up being Jacob Fry's best friend once you get elected. Just you're the new.
He already has a best friend. It's the incumbent. Yeah.
He's going to buddy up to you if you get elected. You'll be the council member then.
Yeah. So I'm fortunate. I have the opportunity to do this job without needing a job in the most literal sense, and that means I bring to it an independence. I'm also not the DFL endorsed candidate, although I am a Democrat and also pro-choice and also labor supported. I'm not endorsed. I don't have lobbyist money. I don't have subcontractor money. I don't have liquor store money, developer money. So I have this independence that I think is what we really need right now. And yeah, it's going to drive the establishment crazy, but it's going to be an opportunity for the council to really come together around the greater good. And I think there are a lot of folks who are to the left of me who could and should be excited to have somebody who's not just going to take the script from City Hall and downtown interests and just behave directly from that. You know, we need to be able to stand up to the enterprise and make sure it's accountable for our safety, our roads, and the things that Ward 13 wants to see for everyone.
So could you imagine being a council member for like a decade? Is that something you could ever do?
I don't think that, I don't think this is meant to be a career. I really don't. Things change, when the incumbent was elected, Prince was still alive, right? Like, I've started two businesses during that 10 years. Things change a lot. And I think it's important that we continue to refresh who's in the game so that we can be relevant for, all generations and all demographics and kind of be with and alongside a city as it's changing and evolving. So 10 years seems long to me. However, I am committed to what it is that Ward 13 needs and how I can be helpful. Fortunately, no shortage of talent in Ward 13 and lots of options for a kind of reliably moderate ward when it comes to folks who could do this job and probably should have an opportunity to serve.
Probably asked you this last time we talked, but like, what's the big public safety question? I tend to think it's not staffing, because staffing is just going to do what it's going to do. No matter how much money we shovel into the police, it's very difficult to hire cops, especially in Minneapolis with the reputation that MPD has. What's the big question that you're posing to voters about the future and the choice this year?
We have dragged our feet on alternative responses. The Office of Innovation and Performance Management had a plan for sending non-sworn individuals, you don't need a badge and a gun to answer a lot of the calls for service and help. And if we had gotten behind that sooner, I think that there are a lot of egregious harms that maybe would not have occurred. So it's not pro-cop to be against and unwilling to move forward with alternative responses. So even to this moment, our behavioral crisis response is underfunded, and we need to staff that up, not only so that we can be effective with what the needs are in the community, but also so that we can bring sworn officers to focus on crime, like crime. like robbery crime, not people having mental health challenges or other problems like unsheltered homelessness. I mean, those are not things that we should have to have, law enforcement engaged with. So being willing to kind of hold both those things at once and realize, okay, that's the future. let's stop pretending it's not.
Is there anyone secretly supporting you, Kate Mortensen? Who is it? Who is secretly supporting? Who's afraid to come out and say, I support Kate Mortensen?
So many people are secretly supporting
me. Really? Is there a lot of fear?
There's a lot of fear. So for example, neighborhood associations, like, I think they are just absolutely the fabric and the glue of our communities across the city, the 70 plus number of them that we have. And I recognize there's a 501c3, you know, aspect where they political activity, they have to be careful. But, you know, other candidates have been able to come and say hello and introduce themselves at neighborhood associations. But in Ward 13, I do think that there is a certain level of concern that people have, like, what if I get behind Kate and Kate doesn't win, then, oh my gosh, I was on the wrong side of it. I don't think our politics should work that way, though.
Yeah.
I tell you, I will stand right next to someone who challenges me when I'm elected. And after 10 years, if you need the mayor's help fundraising to win this job back, you know, maybe it's time to pass the torch. I've spent the last 17 years, John, getting to know people in the public sector, the private sector, nonprofit, philanthropy. When I was leading the NCAA Men's Final Four, that's when I really fell in love with the entire city. Working through complex things with, you know, all comers, and seeing like what we can do when we come together is just, it's really powerful and it stays with you. And I want us to shine in that way and better.
What else should we talk about, Kate Mortensen?
I would like to talk about the endorsement.
Which endorsement?
Your endorsement.
Oh, my endorsement? Okay,
yes.
Let's talk about the endorsement. It's the endorsement, right?
It is. It's the capital T endorsement because...
I don't think it'll do you any good in Ward 13.
What? No, it absolutely is critical. When it comes to the social issues that we're facing as a, you know, as a city and as a society, I'm going to be so much better. I'm going to be so much more in sync with our yard signs and our values in Ward 13. You want to take it right?
Yeah, we can take it right.
I never would have voted to boot rent control while Muslim colleagues were celebrating a significant religious holiday. I never would have. I would not take the vote to pull down the roof depot, and I'm excited about the vision that they have. And I would have supported the Office of Innovation and Performance Management. And I would not be so parsimonious with the REIB, Racial Equity, Inclusion, and Belonging Office. I mean, these are, we have a real problem with the work culture in City Hall. And I don't think our Ward 13 representative really brings our values. So, if I were speaking to progressives and people on the left, whether it's climate or you name it, I'm gonna lean in more. And it's not gonna be the words, it's gonna be the actions.
You're very willing to talk, and I love how open you are to me, because it is all about me.
Actually, right?
And also, like, Chris Meyer did his Twitter thread where he didn't endorse you, but also complimented how open you were to him and willing to talk. And the social engineering thing, look, I have a bike walk in transit shirt I'm wearing.
I know. I didn't even wear a campaign t-shirt, but you've got your message there. Yeah, no,
so
I get it.
It was a huge red flag, and so I'm thinking the constituency you appeal to when you run for office is the constituency that you serve. I think most people who run for office are being honest to their voters and people who support them, and they want to deliver on what they promise.
Yes.
And so it's a very difficult question for me, because I believe the case you make against Palmisano is true. What do we have to show for 10 years? What is her agenda? I don't think she's particularly intellectually honest, whereas you are willing to, like, talk to me and explain yourself, which endorsement is a difficult question for me.
Okay.
No
question,
offense.
Though, what is it that I have said? I said, don't socially engineer me out of my vehicle or people.
Right.
Again, not me. Understanding I'm representing the concerns and needs of the ward, which includes, you know, right, many older people, like, so, demographically older people. So what I know from conversations is the first thing that these folks say is, I have a bicycle. I like to bike.
Right.
Like, there's nothing wrong with biking, but it's a matter of having it land well in the community. And so, you know, having planned the Final Four and having worked through people's concerns about, is this an elitist event that's only for ticket holders, and having very truly sincerely felt like, no, and it shouldn't be. It's a chance for us to shine as a city and celebrate the talents in our diverse communities and bring all families downtown to have a great time. Like, it's all blah, blah, blah until you really do it. And so when I really do it and I am there for people who want multimodal transportation, you know, I think that's when people are like, okay, she's, what she's doing is, it's fair. Maybe not choosing a path, but choosing a, not choosing a side, but choosing a path.
But it was the sequence of events at the candidate forum where Paul Masana was saying something I totally agree with and think should be non-controversial, that we need to reduce vehicle miles traveled, and that's about providing alternatives. And you followed it up with no social engineering. I just, that's what really got me. Oh, it got me in the heart.
I guess so, because ever since then, you seem sad.
I have turned, I'm not sad, I'm okay.
Well, but like,
I did turn it into a meme. I have said social engineering a ton since you said that, so it really did stick in my head.
Yeah. Well, I mean, did you hear the noise in the room when I said that?
People groaned in approval, which is a noise I didn't think existed in the world, a groan of approval.
Ward 13, you know, is feeling that way, and you know, what that is empathy. It's recognizing what that emotion is and naming it and being willing kind of to say that out loud. You know, this is how people in this community are feeling, and this is the concern that they have. It doesn't mean that the desire of those very same people is to shut down these different options. I feel very comfortable going into that space of like my side, your side, which side, and coming out of it like it really isn't about a side. Like, there is a measured way forward, and if there isn't, then, you know, what's the game plan for society?
I think my endorsement would do you harm in Ward 13. Go, oh, Kate Mortensen teaming up with that Wedge Live guy to ruin Ward 13.
So you know, like the conventional status quo that I was talking about earlier, and like, will people endorse me, or do they hope that I'll win, you know? And a lot of them do, but those who are kind of minding the chessboard of like who's in what place and power. And by the way, I love the opportunity to disrupt that, because that is just not how a democracy should work. There's no foregone conclusion. People need to spend the time, get to know their options, and make a learned choice, which we're perfectly capable of in Ward 13. But some of that kind of status quo group of conventional wisdom holders, a lot of them very steeped in DFL endorsement processes, and I don't disrespect that group. That's why I went to the convention, even though it was 100% guaranteed I would not be endorsed, because I do respect that group. However, they sort of put out, there's been various little whisper campaigns trying to kind of figure out what's going to stick on me that could make me less attractive.
Oh, really?
And one of them is that Kate is woke.
Oh, really? Are you also a socialist? Are you a socialist?
Well, I'm going to choose this moment to say I am not. I love socialists, though. I have socialists in my life. Some of them may be my children.
I want to hear more about this woke attack on you.
So it's because I had been having conversations with you and Mr. Mike Norton.
We're not woke, though. Mike Norton and I aren't really woke. People who are woke would be offended to hear that Mike Norton and I have been included in that group.
But so this is high school, right? Remember, it's happening. It's happening again, John. We're in high school. And so because I was hanging out with, in appreciation, with people who have different political points of view than I have, and learning from them and being willing to laugh at myself when I'm wrong or appear, you know, whatever, oafish, that had folks going, oh, she's going to talk to them. She's going to work with them. And it's like, yes, I am, actually. I am going to both talk to and work with people that I don't 100% agree with.
Yeah, well, let me assure those people that I don't think Kate Mortensen is going to cater to the needs of Wedge Live.
Well, yeah, I mean, I know, like, there are some things where, I mean, even Mike Norton, we have a difference of opinion about how and where we want to see cannabis used. And he frequently likes to use it right before we meet.
I'd like to see cannabis not used before we meet, Mike Norton. Is that what you told him?
No, I was like, okay, this is legal. But personally, you know, I feel like if I'm representing Ward 13, I want to be thoughtful about, you know, the smell and the, you know, the people who are older tend to be less accepting of that. And are there ways that we can respect that it's the law and at the same time have an opportunity to, you know, preserve some of the aspects of life in Southwest Minneapolis that generations who grew up with, you know, that not being legal or accessible can, you know, also feel comfortable.
I feel okay treating it on par with cigarette smoke. Like, wherever it is we frown on people smoking cigarettes should probably be where we don't allow people to smoke marijuana.
I mean, you're probably right about that.
Is he just an anything goes, smoke it anywhere kind of guy? Smoke it in restaurants?
Well, let's think about the hierarchy here. So there are those little candy cigarettes that I used to have when I was a kid. So that would be on the low end of disturbing to others, right? And then there would maybe be like an actual cigarette.
Right.
And then there's a cigar. And then there's a pipe. And then there's cannabis.
Cigars are on the worst tier.
Do you think so?
Cigars are awful.
Worse than cannabis?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I can't stand them.
So, okay. Look at how well I can work across differences. I agree with you. So what we're going to do, John, is make sure that while smoking cannabis will be allowed in our perfect future kingdom, there will be no cigar smoking. No cigar smoking.
Yes. See, you're woke now.
I am.
You agree with me.
That didn't even hurt.
It's because I was at a concert at Lake Harriet, and the big crowds show up for that, right? People bring chairs and blankets, and they gather together to listen to music. Crowds are so big that you can't even see the stage.
Yeah.
And there was a guy,
that's the best,
like a couple of people over, just smoking a cigar. You know, it didn't ruin the experience, but it was annoying. I was irritated.
But if you traded that out for a, I don't know what they call them these days, a cannabis cigarette, then it would be just as kind of off-putting, right?
And it would be irritating. Right? I'm not someone who smokes and I don't enjoy the smell.
But do you used to?
What's that?
Didn't you used to?
Oh no, I never have.
Oh wow.
I only take free samples of Mike Norton's drug candies. I can deal with the candies, they don't give off a scent.
Oh, it's the smell that gets you.
But I was a very old person until I had tried any drugs. When is it that you started doing drugs?
Oh, I thought you weren't gonna ask me that question. I mean, I come from a long time ago. I come from the era when, like, the parents of my generation would get prescriptions for beer in the hospital because it would help with lactation, believe it or not. And they would be in the hospital drinking a beer and smoking a cigarette. Like, believe it or not, those were back in the days when you could smoke on airplanes and cars had no seatbelts.
Like the Mad Men era.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know, I was probably 13. This is terrible.
Ooh.
So I probably snuck a cigarette from my mom. And then, not at 13, but in my teens, I definitely did smoke. And boy, did I enjoy it. And then I realized, like, a person who's immunocompromised, like I am, I have asthma. It's just not a good long-term game plan. So I shrugged that off about 2 decades ago.
I figure we'll end it in Linden Hills. How do you feel about that?
I love it. Linnea Hills?
Is that what we call it? Is there a neighborhood rivalry going on?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of loyalty, and I understand it. You know, like, there are friendships and experiences that people have had that, hey, it's a small town. This is hyper-local politics.
Do you ever commute by bike?
I did.
You did? When?
I did.
And
so
for how long?
I had an office in Loring Park called Loring Corners, and when I got this bike, which my hubby gave me for a couple birthdays ago, I would commute down Lindale Avenue, not kidding, or Hennepin Avenue.
Really?
And to Loring Park. And boy, it was scary because I went through that little like underground tunnel thing. I mean, not literally the Lowry Tunnel, but there is a little tunnel that there's like, you're not supposed to be on a bike in that thing. And suddenly I was, but I just, yeah. So that was delightful. And then I would stop and get a coffee and like lock up my bike and feel like very like cool and relevant by being on a bike. Hey, if I win, will you come with me on my first day and we'll bike to City Hall?
I can make that promise, sure. Let's bike to City Hall on your first day.
Yay! Back to my campaign HQ, otherwise known as my dining room table.
I'm not gonna ask you where you live, but.
I'm in the, hey everyone, see you at my house.
Don't go to Kay Mortensen's house. That's the thing about politics these days. I worry about the era when people go to people's houses, if anyone good wants to run for office anymore, especially local office. Like, it's been that way nationally for a while.
Right.
And it used to be city council was kind of a sleepy job and nobody knew who you were.
Yeah.
You wouldn't get yelled at on the street for having a bad opinion.
Right.
But now you're kind of potentially ruining your life and your family's life.
Yep, that's me. So I recognize that that's a reality of politics today. And one of the things, honest to goodness, that I hope to do is to restore some dignity to, you know, the meaning of that service and demonstrate with colleagues, like, what it looks like to not get your way and how to, you know, remain committed and reset every day if you have to and go back in there without letting relationships harden. And just like work it out, get the people's business done. And I'm sure there are times when I'll be very frustrating to people. But on the whole, we need super qualified people to want to run for office. And I'm not saying that qualified people aren't. But it's a challenging environment right now, but it doesn't have to be that way. Like, the people involved can just decide, like, we don't have to do it that way.
So my mom has gave me feedback on the last episode with Elliot Payne and was disappointed I didn't ask him what his favorite restaurants were or favorite places were in the ward. So a question for my mom, or from my mom, I guess, is give me some restaurant recommendations.
Hi, Mrs. Edwards, it's Kate Mortensen. So one of my favorite places is George and the Dragon. It's an awesome little pub at basically 50th and Lindale. I also really appreciate Cafe Ina, and I love that it is it's South American cuisine and really done super super well and like family owned, which is great. I love it that Alex Roberts and his wife Margot have brought Brasa and Alma to our neighborhood in Lyndhurst. But I also love going up to Colita and Martina. And I really think it's important, if I hold this position, to show up and support local businesses. It's a big part of my platform, because when our local businesses aren't thriving and they have to leave, then our experience of city life goes kind of down. And we have some really amazing local restaurants.
So here's a question that I am stealing from the League of Women Voters in one of their candidate forums. It's a trend nationwide that downtowns are losing office tenants and the tax base is shrinking. And the question was, like, how do we revitalize downtown and compensate for that loss of tax base? And the answer one of the candidates gave, who I won't name, just so we don't get into it, is that basically we're headed to a future of austerity, and I'm the candidate who will just like vote to slash the city's budget. I feel like a very negative answer. Do you have a more positive outlook than that, or are we really headed for doom and austerity?
So there's a quote about change that I really like. If you don't like change, try irrelevance.
Okay.
And then you become a dinosaur, and you might be a really high performing dinosaur, but still, the future is not bright for you. So I think as a city, whether it is, you know, how we operate our workplaces, hybrid, remote, and in-person, how we handle public safety by using more technology, like, we cannot be afraid of the future. That's one of the reasons I want to serve, because there are people for whom change makes it, you know, you uncomfortable. And so how can we make that more accessible and acceptable, to be always leaning toward what's next? So when it comes to downtown, first of all, you know, it if it is no longer the engine of our economy, then it is going to be some painful times for the budget coming. And it's probably going to take a little while because we have a couple hundred million in one-time Biden funds that we've been using to plug holes in our budget. And next year, 25, rather, the next budget that we pass in 25, because 24 is already set, we're not going to have those funds. So there's going to literally be like an $80 million gap. And you know what's going to make that up is, we hope, economic activity. But if not, it's going to be fees and taxes. So we need to roll up our sleeves and think about how to serve our businesses that are downtown, how to make downtown a place that people want to be. So I don't know if it's a giant dog park on Nicollet Avenue. I don't know if it's a giant playground. Is it daycare that we have, you know, all over around downtown? How do we put a school in downtown? How do we make downtown a great place for families as well as adults seeking entertainment? You know, we should probably diversify that portfolio, because 200,000 people is what we relied on coming in every day for like forever. And now that's gone. So how do we have a more diverse portfolio downtown?
Should we end on the beach?
Yeah.
Okay. With the lake behind us. Here we are on Lake Harriet. It's the end. Kate Mortensen here at Lake Harriet. We're signing off. We're taking a selfie. Okay. I'm your host, John Edwards. This has been the Wedge Live Podcast. My guest has been Kate Mortensen. Say goodbye, Kate.
Hi, Wedge Podcast listeners.
This is a real thing. Real thing.
None of you have the balls to stop this.
Today.
We're in the Wedge neighborhood right now. 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 Right now.